And good afternoon. It's Topical Currents. I'm Bonnie Berman, and Joseph Cooper returns on Monday. Today, we look at an award-winning statewide volunteer-based program called SHINE. It's an acronym for Serving Health Insurance Needs of Elders. The mission of the SHINE program is to support the Florida Department of Elder Affairs mission by providing free and unbiased health insurance counseling through a dedicated network of volunteers, empowering Florida seniors to make informed healthcare choices. Joining us now in the studio is the SHINE Volunteer Area Coordinator for Broward County, Edith Gooden-Thompson. Welcome, Edith.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
And thank you so much for being here. I must admit that until researching for today, I was really unfamiliar with this really vital service in Florida. So let's begin with an overview of SHINE. What is it and how does it work?
Okay. As you mentioned, SHINE does stand for Serving Health Insurance Needs of Elders. And we provide free information and counseling and assistance on a variety of topics, not excluding Medicare, Medicaid, Medicare supplement plans, long-term care insurance. And we also do prescription assistance. We also work with employer and military insurance and explaining and helping clients understand how they work with Medicare as well.
So how long has it been in existence, and how and why was it created?
Well, we just celebrated our 20th anniversary in 2012. So we've been around since 1992. And we have expanded our base somewhat. We have a very small outreach budget, so a lot of people don't know about us. But we do as much as we can with outreach and getting exposure, and thank you for bringing us on this show today. So hopefully more people will know who we are and what we do.
And how are you funded?
We're funded as a grant program through the Department of Elder Affairs.
And it's throughout the state?
It's throughout the state, yes.
Now, you're the volunteer coordinator for Broward County. What does that mean exactly? What does that entail?
Well, my job is recruiting and training volunteers and also following up with them and also encouraging others to at least know about us and also opening new SHINE sites. We have an office at 5300 Hiatus Road in the city of Sunrise, but we also have satellite offices throughout Broward County from Pembroke Pines to Deerfield.
And what about Monroe and Palm Beach County and Dade County?
Well, I'm just for Broward.
Right. But do, but
do
there
have
are...
I do have a counterpart in Miami-Dade.
Okay.
And also in Palm Beach County. We do have 1-800 number that we publish, and that number will, wherever you are, if you're in Broward, if you're in Dade County, that number will route you to a Dade County person like myself. If you're in Palm Beach County, that same number will route you to a Palm Beach County volunteer like myself.
Okay, and that 800 number is?
That 800 number is 1-800-963-5337.
Or 1-800-96-ELDER.
Or exactly.
For those who can do it that way.
Uh-huh.
So I hear the training to become a volunteer for SHINE is pretty rigorous. What does it entail exactly?
It includes 4 days of training from 9 to 4 and 6 weeks of mentoring, following up with an experienced volunteer. After that, there is a certification test that you must take, which is a test that is published by the Department of Elder Affairs. And after that, of course, you work with an experienced volunteer until you feel comfortable in going by yourself,
doing it yourself. And where, speaking of doing it by yourself, where are the services provided? Can you do it by phone? Do you go to people who are homebound? How does that work?
All of the above. You can call us by phone. Most, I want to say, 80% of our counseling is on the phone. We do have sites, as I said, throughout the county for people who need to walk in with information that we need to see. Also, we can arrange for homebound assistance if needed.
But you don't? Do you provide transportation?
We don't.
No. All right. Now, it's for elders we're talking about. Is there an age requirement to avail yourself of SHINE services?
Well, you must be Medicare eligible, which means you must be at least 65 or disabled and receiving Medicare benefits.
I see. I see. So if you're, what if you're not a senior, but you're on Medicaid? Are you eligible for SHINE assistance?
We can help you with how Medicaid works with the Medicaid program. We can help you do applications for Medicaid programs. But as far as following up and doing status and progress reports, we don't do that.
And if someone is under the care of another, can counseling be provided to the caregiver?
Yes, we can provide counseling to caregivers as well.
Okay, now this isn't just counseling and assistance for Medicare recipients. It extends to those with Medicaid, those who are dual eligible,
I understand. Yes.
Medicare supplemental insurance, when you have to, what is that called, Medigap?
Medigap.
Okay, long-term care insurance.
Yes.
And the prescription assistance. So how does this, I mean, could you give us a step-by-step, I mean, if I wanted to get help right now, figuring out how to deal with, because a lot of people don't have computers, or if they do, they're not computer literate. It must be very difficult.
Well, even those with computers, we're finding that a lot of the information that they're receiving is so confusing that we get calls every day for someone who's just turning 65, and they're receiving, being bombarded with tons and tons of mail from Advantage plans, from supplement policies, from everyone who wants to give them some help. And so they call us because we are free, number one, and we are unbiased. So we don't promote any one particular plan.
I see. I was going to ask you that. So you just give objective advice, telling them how to kind of wend their way through all this.
Exactly. We help them navigate the Medicare system.
Now, what's going to happen when this Affordable Care Act comes into it is in existence. When it comes into play, though, is that going to change everything?
For us, no. We will continue to work with seniors and helping them with Medicare. Medicare has not changed. The Affordable Care Act, there's one little piece in there, well, a couple of pieces that really affect senior citizens, and that is preventive care, because a lot of preventive care would then be free of charge. Also closing the donut hole, which those who are in the Medicare system understand that after you spend between yourself and the insurance plan about $2,900, then you are responsible for 100% of the cost until you have spent out of pocket about $4,700, which...
This is confusing.
Already. So you see why people call us to say, okay, so how does that work with me? And we do one-on-one counseling with people to help them understand where they are in the system.
If you'd like to join in the conversation, if you have questions about SHINE or what they or their services, please call us at 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. You can speak to Edith and ask her all the questions you may have. You can also email us, radio@wlrn.org, or you can tweet us at Topical Currents. I think we do have an email. Let's see. David from North Miami. Please give phone number without the letters. Not all listeners have landlines or non-smartphones. Okay. So that number again is
1-800-963-5337.
963-5337. Okay, 1-800-963-5337. Okay, I hope that helps, David. So getting back to what about community outreach? Do you do community outreach?
Yes, we do. Every weekend we're invited to health fairs, or we also have a speakers bureau. So if you have a club or a group that you would like for us to come and talk on a particular topic, right now what's really popular is seniors can expect in 2014 as far as how Medicare will be affected. So we do go out and do outreach to community groups, and we do health fairs.
And does all the information gathered by this volunteer remain confidential?
Absolutely. We abide by all the HIPAA laws as far as confidentiality and protected health information.
So let's turn our attention to this Medicare annual election period. Actually, what we're going to do, we need to take a break on today's Topical Currents, and let's take our break before we go on to this Medicare annual election period. We're talking about SHINE, Serving Health Insurance Needs of Elders, on today's Topical Currents. That break, and we'll be right back. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you on this Thursday. We're speaking with Edith Gooden. Wait a minute. I just love Edith Gooden Thompson. She's the Area Volunteer Coordinator for Broward County for the SHINE program, which stands for Serving Health Insurance Needs of Elders. Again, if you want to call in with a question, the number is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. You can email radio at WLRN.org or tweet us at Topical Currents. So we were getting to the annual election period. When is it this year, and what happens during this time, Edith?
Well, the annual election period starts at October 15th, and it runs through December 7th. And that's an important change. It's been around now a couple of years, but people are still calling. I got a gentleman calling yesterday, wanted to know if he still had until December 31st to make a switch in his plan. So it's important to get the word out. No, the annual election period ends December 7th. Whatever you have on December 8th is what you can expect to have on January 1, 2014.
Okay. So that's very important. And what happens during this time? You choose what plan you're going to be on?
It is just that. It's an open enrollment. You can switch your Advantage plan. You can drop your Advantage plan and go back to original Medicare. You can...
What's an Advantage plan?
An Advantage plan is a plan that's an HMO or a PPO or one of the medical savings accounts or any of those managed care type of plans.
We do have a caller. We have a couple of callers. Let's talk to Barbara in Miami. Barbara, welcome to Topical Currents. You're on with Edith.
Thank you. I think you partly answered my question. My mother has a Blue Cross HMO, and they keep eliminating her doctors, and it's harder and harder to find a doctor for. I wanted to know the time period, which you just said, is to switch her back to Medicaid, but what would she be missing out from the HMO, and should she get a supplemental plan?
That's a very common question. If she switches from an Advantage plan, she will lose some of the, quote, advantages of being in one of those plans, which includes some extra benefits like vision, hearing, and dental services. Some plans also include transportation, or they may include a small over-the-counter benefit for over-the-counter drugs. And just that, that's what she would be missing. So if she goes back to original Medicare and picks up a supplement plan, then she would have to come out of pocket for dental, vision, and any other of those ancillary services.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. So speaking of drugs, which you just mentioned, let's talk a little bit more about drugs and how SHINE helps with drug assistance, prescription assistance.
Sure. One of the things we do for people who have moderate incomes is to help them sign up for or register for programs that are specifically designed to help them pay for drugs. One very popular one, which I'm sure a lot of people may already know about and maybe some don't, is called Extra Help. Now, Extra Help is actually offered through the Social Security Administration. But we, as SHINE counselors, can do the registration online for any client that calls in. Now, you don't have to come into the office to do that. We can do it on the phone.
Okay.
Now, the benefit of Extra Help is having your premium paid for if there is a premium for your drug plan. Also, you would not pay more than $6.60 for a brand name drug.
Oh.
And
it doesn't have to be generic.
A generic would cost $2.65.
So they actually, this Extra Help is that EXTRA
Help. Extra Help.
And they actually pay the premium for...
Yes. If your income is less than $1,437 a month,
okay,
less than, then it's a good possibility that you would qualify for Extra Help. Now, Social Security does the does that part of it. We just help you apply.
God, there's so much out there that it's so confusing. It's so good that you do these things. Let's talk to Ralph in Miami has a question. Ralph, good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm 100% disabled through the veterans. I'm also retired from the federal government, and so I have an HMO because I'm married. And I just turned 60. When I turned 62, they gave me Part A. And now I'm wondering, do I have to get Part B?
When you turn 65, in order to keep that Advantage plan, that HMO, yes, you'll have to have Part B as well.
Oh, I would have to get Part B.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And now I know you don't recommend, but should I go with the insurance company that I'm now with, medical insurance, or look around?
I would tell anyone to look around. Because regardless of what you have now, it doesn't hurt to see if there's something better that you may not be aware of. And that's what we do. If you gave us a call today or tomorrow, a counselor will ask you a few questions. First of all, we need to know your zip code because we do know that some plans are available in Miami-Dade that are not in Broward or in Broward that are not in Palm Beach. So we need your zip code first. Then we need a list of the medications that you take because we don't just pick out a plan or two or three plans. We only give you plans to look at so you can make your own decision, but we want to make sure that all of your drugs are covered first. Then we'll print that out for you. We'll go to medicare.gov, www.medicare.gov, and anybody can do that, but we just happen to be really good at it.
Yeah.
And we will print out at least three plans that cover all of your meds that's located in your county, and then you can give us a call back once you get your packet in the mail, and we'll walk you through the information that you received so that you can make an informed decision about what you want.
Okay, and you're at 800-963-5337?
That's correct.
Thank you very much. Have a good day, and thank you for the information, and keep up the good work.
Okay, and thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, and we have another question from Maxine in Delray Beach. Good afternoon, Maxine. Welcome to Topical Currents.
Hi. I don't have a question. I have a comment. I just tuned in, so maybe I missed it. But I heard your guest mention to the person who wanted to know about the difference between switching back from an Advantage plan to Medicare. I'm disabled. I have an Advantage plan. The other big thing about Advantage plans is that the copays are lower than Medicare. Hospitalization is less expensive. Going to specialist doctors is less expensive than Medicare. The other thing is that I get Extra Help, and the Extra Help is not only the drug coverage portion, it also pays my premium for health insurance if you qualify as a low-income person.
Okay, Edith?
Yes. The companion piece to that is qualifying for what is called Medicare savings programs. Now, Medicare savings is offered through the Department of Children and Families. So you can see why someone calling in may get a little confused about where to go to find information. So we help them figure that out, and we can also do the application for that as well.
Okay. I just want it known about the copays.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you so much for calling, Maxine.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
But just to go a little further with the Medicare savings programs, not only will it pay for premiums, but it will also, if you qualify for one particular program called QMB, that program will also pay your Part B premium as well.
All right. Okay. Well, now some important information as well is how do I become a SHINE volunteer, and how does one qualify to become a SHINE volunteer?
We will take anyone who has, first of all, the time and the interest and who has pretty good skills with the internet and the computer. That's one of the main things that we do now. Everything is computerized. Mm-hmm. Everything's on the internet. All of our resources are on the internet. And the training includes one full day of going to websites and learning what kind of information is there and how you use it.
So, and the website, your website is shineflorida.org?
Florida Shine.
Florida Shine. Yeah, sorry about
www.floridashine.org.
And we'll have that link on our website today.
You can
and you
also,
have another website,
yeah, you
right?
can also get to us through the Aging and Disability Resource Center of Broward at www.adrcbroward.org.
Okay, so you have both those websites. It's floridashine.org and adrcbroward.org. Well, Tori has a good question for us in Miami. Let's see. I don't know if you'll be able to answer this either. Go ahead, Tori. You're on with Edith.
Well, I actually had a comment. First, I wanted to thank the volunteers for helping all the people on Medicare. But my comment was that it really doesn't have to be this complicated. And I think that everyone should really hold their politicians accountable for making it this complicated. And in my opinion, anyway, the only reason it is this complicated is because the politicians are paying more attention to special interests than the needs of seniors and people with disabilities and actually the needs of any American who, you know, who wants health care.
I agree, but such as it is, we do have to work with what we have.
Yeah. All right, Tori. Well, thank you for calling.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we should be so passive. I think we should be more active.
I think maybe, you know, it's hard for some people, certainly if they're seniors or disabled, to be so active, you know?
I don't know that that's true. I think seniors vote more than average.
Well,
and,
that's...
Yeah. I think that they shouldn't accept this level of complication. I think you really... I think seniors really should speak out and say that it shouldn't be this complicated.
Well, it's a very good point, and we appreciate you bringing it up, Tori.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I must say, we do have a good cadre of volunteers right now. We have about 40, and they're located throughout Broward County. Last year, we together serviced about almost 5,000 people. Mm. So we have a good number of people who sought us out last year, and we were able to help.
Well, I want to thank you so much for all your work and for being with us today. And we've been speaking with Edith Gooden-Thompson. She is the SHINE Volunteer Area Coordinator for Broward County. Again, the websites are floridashine.org and adrcbroward.org. And the phone number, again, is
1-800-536-9637.
Sorry, 1-800-963-5337. Okay, we got it now.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Edith, for spending the time with us today, and the best of luck to you.
Oh, well, thank you so much, and thanks for inviting me.
Okay, and Food and Dining is next. And welcome back to Thursday's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you. When you think Miami, then food, what comes to mind? Well, today we'll get a look at the history of the cuisine of Miami. Joining us now for Food and Dining is chef, author, and syndicated columnist, Linda Gassenheimer. Good afternoon, Linda.
Hello, Bonnie. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, and likewise.
And Joe will be back next week.
Yes, he'll be back Monday.
Well-deserved vacation.
Exactly.
Right. Well, you know, Bonnie, Miami might be young. We consider it a young city, but we certainly have a fascinating history. From the Tequesta Indians to Cortaditas, stone crabs, empanadas. Well, our guest, Mandy Baca, gives us a culinary and cultural history of Miami in her book. It's called The Sizzling History of Miami Cuisine. Let's welcome Mandy Baca.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
So happy to be here.
great to have you with us. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any food memories of early South Florida cuisine? We'd love to hear about it. Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. I'm not sure. We don't have email today?
We do.
We do? Okay.
We do. radio@WLRN.org, or you can even tweet us at Topical Currents.
Okay. Also with us, our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype, and you can read Fred's wine suggestions from my Dinner Minutes column that's in today's Miami Herald, and also his wine column is in the Herald. Fred, any wine history here?
Oh, we have a wine history, we have a beer history, and we have a liquor history, and it's pretty wild.
Yeah, I'm almost afraid to ask about it. Well, let's go to Mandy Baca. Your fascination with food culture led you to the University of Gastronomic Science in Italy?
Yes.
So how did that bring you back to Miami?
Well, I am a Miami native. I decided to leave, like many people do, to explore. But I needed to come back because there's so much rich history here and nobody has really tapped into the food history part of it.
Did you learn about historical food at the in Italy, or was there anything there connected with your love of history?
The program was interdisciplinary, so we did study a lot of history, but it was all Italian food history, and that sparked the idea for Miami food history.
Oh, and I bet you ate well there too.
Yes, it's delicious.
Couldn't be bad. Well, I like the title of your book, Sizzling, Miami Cuisine. So what did you mean by that?
Well, food sizzles, so that's a given. But, you know, when you think of Miami, you think of the heat and the sun and the surf and the sand. That's sizzling, too. I mean, and we're all in Miami, and it's hot, and everyone's sexy. So got a little tongue-in-cheek play on the words.
Okay, I thought you meant sizzling because it's quite a checkered history here.
That as well. That's true.
Okay. So your book is divided by decades. It goes in the 20s, the 40s, 50s through the 70s. Did you see any food trends throughout that area? Throughout the history, actually.
Certainly. And that's why this book is so interesting. People forget, because Miami is all about fun, people forget that it is full of history, and the history is what has impacted us so much. In the 20s, people came because of the land boom, and people came because they wanted to build up this brand new city. I mean, it was a swamp, and now it's a metropolitan area full of buildings, and it's lively now. But back then, it was just a swamp, and people came to make money off of that. And they came from all over the country, from New York, from California. And so there was a big influence there that did influence our eating habits. Then in the 20s, in the 1920s and the 30s, a large Jewish population moved in, and that brought in their own wave of food. In the 40s and 50s, the vets from the World War II came in, and they brought...
Yeah, because Miami was a staging place for the army and all, so there were a lot of people here because of the war.
Correct.
Both wars, actually. Both World Wars.
Correct. What kind of foods came in with the vets?
Well, Americanized versions of Chinese, Italian, all that, German food, because they enjoyed it so much abroad, they wanted it here. So they Americanized that version of it. And then, of course, in the 60s, the Cubans came, and that sort of opened the floodgates for the 70s and the 80s, where the rest of Central and South America came, and the Haitians as well.
So a total mix-mash of all kinds of foods. Now, you've brought something for us to taste. Bonnie's digging in. She's always the first one to dig in. Here she goes.
Well, when it's something like this,
So tell us what you brought and why did you select this particular food from a historical point of view?
And so inside my book, there's a lot of recipes. I try to pick from different influences. And this one particularly is Steve Raiklin's mango salsa. And I just loved it because, you know, it's fresh and it's great for the...
So Bonnie's got a mouthful.
We're in the middle of August. You hear that? I mean,
how can you tell?
Are you sharing?
I'm sharing.
It's great to pair it with just some light pita chips, and it's a great lunch, and it's great for, I mean, we're in the middle of August, and it's very hot, so.
Well, now, you have big cubes of mango, and then there's cucumber in it, but the cucumber is almost pickled. So what are the flavors that I'm tasting? Because they're really, really good.
Correct. Well, I've let it sit and marinate overnight, and it has a little bit of lime juice, mint, and ginger. And so that lime juice and also some sugar have made the pickle almost, the cucumber into a pickle.
And the mint is really powerful.
Right.
And there's probably not a lot in there, is
no,
there?
No, there's not.
Yeah. Mm.
So
it's excellent.
So that's part of our history in the sense that mangoes are here. We grow a lot of row crops, the cucumbers. And so it's really, I suspect that this is a food that's been through the whole of history of Miami.
Correct.
From that point of view. Well, our number is 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. And, you know, I posted on Facebook and Twitter and all that, what were your memories? We'd love to hear about your memories of Miami. And one person wrote in and said she was talking about the pub on Coral Way.
Yes.
What was that?
The pub on Coral Way. It was an icon in the 50s, along with the Pizza Palace and Orange Julius. People would go there for their... It was considered a special occasion place. And people... It was just an icon, and people loved it.
Right. And another person wrote in that she loved the studio. And she said... She just loved it because they went through their celebrations. Their whole family would go. When she was 15, that was a special thing to do, and on and on, weddings, anniversaries.
I remember the studio.
Do you remember
yes,
it?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Do you remember where it was?
I think it was in Coral Gables, wasn't it?
Could have been.
I was so young that...
We know, 2 years old.
Yeah, at least. No, a little less than that.
Oh, I
Two
see.
Months.
Okay. Now... What were some of Miami's most interesting food characters? There must have been a lot of them.
Oh, definitely. I mean, Miami's full of characters. There's the obvious ones, Norman Van Aken and Alan Saucer, but even before that...
I'm not sure that they are still here today.
Yes.
It's okay for us to call them characters.
I don't think they'd mind.
Okay.
In the beginning eras of Miami, in 1910s and 1920s, there was definitely Jerry Galatis, who was the Greek immigrant that brought us Seven Seas Restaurant. And, you know, everybody came from all over the country to just come to this restaurant. Fresh fish. In the heart of downtown, you would go there before a theater show. Amelia Earhart even went once and dined there. And then there's John Siebold, who his name is still on our buildings in downtown, and he was a German immigrant that brought
now,
us.
What was something about his past? Something happened to him he had to give up his... He had a restaurant there or something, and he had to give it up?
Here in downtown?
Yes.
Correct? Well, he did start as a baker, and there was a lot of anti-Semitic thoughts in that time, so people would...
So he didn't do well because there was an anti-Semitic problem
mm-hmm.
about it.
Correct.
But his name is still on the building.
Correct.
So it's a very nice place to go for jewelry at the moment.
Yes.
Right. I found that it was very, really fascinating about Miami Beach, of course, was filled with swamp rats and mangoes and all. And the first hotel there was Brown's. And it's still there today. In fact, it's on the spot where Prime 112, the celebrity restaurant, is.
When did Joe's Stone Crab open?
That was 1912, I think it was.
1912, mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of Miami Beach, I always liked all the Jewish delis over there. They serve some really authentic food.
And sadly, I think most of them are gone.
Remember Wolfie's?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Wolfie's and...
Yeah.
And somebody else wrote in on Facebook and said that she remembers Sam and Carl's was a Jewish deli in South Miami, which is also gone. So I think now we need to take a break.
We do.
Okay. Well, we're taking a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking about the history of Miami cuisine with Mandy Baca. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking with Mandy Baca about her book, The Sizzling History of Miami Cuisine, Cortaditos, Stone Crabs, and Empanadas. It's a fascinating look at the cuisine and the culture of Miami. So if you're going to be having dinner tonight, we're doing dinner in minutes. And it's a shrimp and peach pasta salad. Now, if you've been in the market lately, these peaches are beautiful. They're ripe right now.
Yes.
So here's a new way to use them rather than just standing over the kitchen sink and letting juice drip
dripping
down. Right. They add a contrasting sort of sweet flavor to the tangy dressing. So if you buy cooked shrimp, the only thing you'll have to heat up in your kitchen is to boil water for pasta, which is really simple.
And even Joe can do that.
Yes.
But we'll try it on when he gets back. you boil the pasta, and I used a shortcut pasta, so any shortcut pasta will do. Mix some mayonnaise, a little warm water to thin it out a bit, horseradish and mustard together. Add some drained pasta to that, the cooked shrimp to that, and just toss it. Then I line a dinner plate with some lettuce or any kind of greens. Spoon the pasta and shrimp on that. Then I add some red bell pepper slices and my peach quarters. And if you want to make it look pretty, you can top it with some chopped chives. That's it. So easy. Couldn't be easier. The complete recipe is at my website. That's dinnerinminutes.com with a photo. And you can also read my eggplant parmesan recipe in today's Herald. And I picked that because eggplants are just beautiful. They're right in season now.
Oh.
So either peaches or eggplant, either way you go, you'll have really good food. And that's in today's Miami Herald. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred, are we drinking historically?
Oh, absolutely. As I'm sure you know, Miami has always been kind of the wild, wild west for wine, beer, and liquor. Although, interestingly, it started out sober. Even before the city was incorporated in 1896, the pioneer Julia Tuttle pushed through deed restrictions banning alcohol anywhere in the city. And, of course, the result was that enterprising businessmen set up dozens of saloons 20 feet outside the city in North Miami.
Why did she do that, Fred?
Well, there was a strong temperance movement in those days, and she was part of that. So they were trying to reform the Americans and make us better people. Didn't work. In fact, for the next 20 years, the Women's Christian Temperance Union continued passing new laws banning booze, and understaffed and probably uninterested Miami police continued not enforcing them.
Well, Fred, to that point, you know, Mandy in her book was writing about when the Biltmore opened in 1926. At the opening, they were serving drinks during Prohibition.
Well, police would never raid a place, you know, a prominent place like that. They'd just go after the little guy if they went after anybody at all, which for the most part they didn't.
Okay.
In fact, when Prohibition was there from 1920 to 1930.
Hello, did we lose Fred?
These rum runners.
Oh, Fred, sorry.
From
hello,
the
Fred.
Bahamas.
Fred, we lost you for a little bit. Prohibition came from 1920 to 1933, and then we lost you.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
Well, so are we.
Well, yeah, Miami exploded in an orgy of illegal speakeasies and rum runners bringing in hooch from the Bahamas and hoodlums and boats actually speeding up the Miami River, machine-gunning the hotels on Flagler Street.
They machine-gunned the hotels?
Yeah, that was a wild and woolly area. That was okay. Worse than the cocaine cowboy era in a lot of ways.
Okay.
My.
But the moment Prohibition ended, there was a Miami Beach blacksmith named Dino Phillips who turned his old forge into a restaurant called, cleverly, The Forge. And over time, it became a watering hole for the likes of Frank Sinatra, Judy Garland, and such. And later on, under Alvin and Sharif Malnick, it built up one of the top wine cellars in the world, always awarded every year by Wine Spectator magazine. with many thousands of bottles in its eight-room cellar, including a bottle I saw one time. Wasn't able to touch, but I saw it. It was a 1822 Chateau Lafite Rothschild that was supposed to be worth $150,000, even though at that age, there's no way it could be drinkable anymore. But Miami really arrived on the world wine map with the South Beach Wine and Food Festival, which started in 1997 at Florida International University. And it's now grown to be one of the biggest wine festivals in the world. I think there were like 60,000 people came to town for that last February, and all the top wineries. The festival was too much for one tourist from Maryland who wrote in a blog, "Paying hundreds of dollars for a few hours' access to an insane amount of booze seems silly." But watching women in fancy dresses with low cleavage and heels falling all over the sandy beach trying to hold wine glasses was amusing. But anyway, 60,000 people can't be wrong, so obviously a whole lot of people loved it. And Florida, with Miami in the lead, has become the second biggest wine market in the country.
Wow, that's amazing. Fantastic.
Well, so under second next to?
California.
Of course.
Of course. Of course.
Yes.
Let's go to Gloria. She's been waiting.
But ahead of New York.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm surprised about that.
Gloria. Hello, Gloria. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi. Gloria, you're on the air.
Hi there. What a wonderful show.
Thank you.
I'm a native Miamian, and my parents went to the opening of the Biltmore, and they went to the reopening at Hialeah. We moved to the beach in 1929, and one of my memories before World War II was the Russian Bear on Lincoln Road, and I can still remember the one and only time I had the most delicious cold borscht, and of course it disappeared with the war.
That was a Russian restaurant in Miami?
It was called the Russian Bear, and it was on Lincoln Road.
Interesting.
Yes. It was extremely popular.
Oh, I never heard of it either. You know about it, man?
Yes. Shortly after the World War II ended, the veterans brought that influence here, and someone opened a restaurant.
In the 40s?
Correct.
In the late 40s. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Gloria.
Well, I thank you for a wonderful show and lots of wonderful memories.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, another restaurant that's still here, that's been here for over 100 years. Can you guess what it is?
Let me guess.
It's, all right, I'll tell you.
Okay, tell me.
Tobacco Road.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
I was thinking, I wasn't even thinking in that line.
Exactly. I could tell from your face. Anyway, it's a checkered history there. Tell us about that,
correct,
Mandy.
It's scandalous. It opened as a bar, and then Prohibition came around, and they had to change it around. So as a storefront, it was a bakery, but there was a speakeasy in the back, and there was a password that you had to use to get in. They stored all their liquor on the second floor, so no one would find out. And, of course, because it's on the river, it's easy access to receive the liquor,
The suspicious liquor.
And then shortly after, it donned a lot of aliases. It was Chanticleer Restaurant at one point, and then it was the Chicken Roost at another point. In the 40s, it was a gay bar, and it wasn't very popular for a lot of people because they didn't want that around in Miami. And then finally, in the 1980s, it opened as Tobacco Road that we know it today.
And upstairs, the liquor isn't there. Anyway, not in boxes. They have jazz up there now.
Correct.
Yes. Is there an email?
Yes, Kathleen. Food Among the Flowers. She talks about Faces in the Grove, The Mutiny and Suzanne's.
But what was it in the Grove? It's called
Faces in the Grove. I didn't know. The Mutiny and Suzanne's.
Right,
we
yes.
remember. Le Festival. And the French Connection.
Right. The Festival was supposed to be such a wonderful French restaurant.
It was. Yeah. And then Marshall Majors and the infamous Neon Leon's. That's a tongue twister.
That one's interesting.
Neon Leon's?
That's a new one.
Okay.
I do not know that one.
All right. Thanks,
That was
Kathleen.
In South Miami. That was a very colorful place. There was a shooting in the parking lot that kind of closed it down.
Oh, what about Fox's? Fox's has been there a long time, hasn't it?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Fox's... Fox's Sharon Inn.
Yes.
And it's been there since, the 1940s?
Correct.
And still busy as can be in South Miami.
And still great. I was there recently.
Yeah. And So that, and then Little of Havana has become a very important segment of our city. But what was there before Little Havana was known as Little Havana?
Correct. Little Havana also has a great history. Right when the settlers first came in the 1890s, it was a Bahamian community. And then slowly as the land boom occurred in the 20s, more and more Jewish, the more and more of the Jewish community came in, and they kind of took over. And so the Bahamian community...
So that was kind of figured like a suburb.
Correct, yes.
At that time.
That was actually the first suburb right outside of downtown Miami. So thereafter, in the 60s, when the Cubans came in, that's where they went, because it was right outside of downtown Miami, and it was cheaper, and it was just, they wanted to live in a suburb that was more accessible.
And you have to mention Versailles, which is the most Cuban few square feet in the world.
Correct.
We always take guests there when they come in, and it's, you don't see that in Iowa or anything like that.
Of course, it's an icon, opened in the 70s.
And you say it's changing again now. The Cuban influence is kind of...
Tapering off. There's a large Central American and South American influence, but recently a lot of more artists are moving in to the area just because it's a lot cheaper.
Okay, so again, it's the price thing. They're leaving Wynwood and that area, and they're coming back into Little Havana. How
correct.
Interesting. Well, it's really been a very tasty week, an interesting week. Thank you, Mandy Baca, for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Her book is The Sizzling History of Miami Cuisine, Cortaditos, Stone Crabs, and Empanadas, a fascinating book and look at Miami cuisine and culture. Fred, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Bonnie,
Hi,
you
friend.
Enjoyed that mango
yes,
salad.
Yes, I did.
Salsa.
Thank you, Mandy, and
right.
Thank you, Linda.
Well, next week we're going to be going back to school with directors of food and nutrition for Miami-Dade, Penny Parham, and Broward, Mary Mulder. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And thanks for tuning in today. We hope you enjoyed the program. Our producer is Richard Ives, with technical direction from Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org, and all the links from today's Shine program. Click on radio and go from there. More info as well at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow at this time, join Ed Bell for another live performance from our downtown Miami studios on South Florida Arts Beat. We'll enjoy a concert with Elston Torres, a 2-time Grammy-nominated songwriter. Joseph Cooper returns for Monday's Topical Currents. We'll hear about how many of today's fruits and veggies have lost their vital nutrients when we speak with Joe Robinson. Join us then. Bonnie Berman wishing you a great day, a great weekend. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next from NPR News. Thanks so much for joining us.